This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Every other week, I'll be joined by a guest. We'll impart our own sex wisdom, ask our own sex questions, and we'll go over all the things they don't teach you in school. But in order to do this, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
In this episode, we speak to Silva Neves about the danger with how some therapists treat LGBTQ plus clients who say,
I treat everybody the same, it's just the person that counts. But by looking at everybody the same, that means we also erase the differences.
Body image issues in the gay community.
They just are muscle bound and they've got zero fat in their bodies. And yet they are lost, really, in the world.
And the side effects of loving your job.
My husband often says, you know, can we get through a dinner party without you mentioning penises and vaginas, please?
Hello and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite and I'm joined as ever by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Today we're joined by a colleague of yours, Mum, fellow sex and relationship therapist Silva Neves, who will be talking to us about why LGBTQ plus people might come to therapy and what pink therapy is. And listeners, you may recognise Silva Neves from a TV show called Sex on the Couch, which he was involved with on BBC Three. And that got me thinking, Mum, if you were going to be on a TV show, what would it be on?
You know what it would be.
I do know what it would be, but I want you to tell the people listening.
It would be House of Games.
Richard Osman's House of Games. Anyone knows anyone who's on that programme, the thing is, Mum and
we
I...
We know lots of people who've been on that programme.
Oh, we know. Well, yeah, we know loads. We've had people on the show who've been on the programme.
Yeah,
what I mean
yeah,
is, if we
several.
Know people who work on it, who can get in Richard's ear and say, Richard,
yeah.
listen.
Let us on it. Let us on it.
If people don't know, Richard Osman's House of Games is it's a quiz show, and there's different quizzes that you can do in little games, right? And at the end of it,
where is Kazakhstan?
Yeah, that's one of the rounds where you have to. Yeah, it says where's Luxembourg, and you've got to point to it on a map.
Yeah,
surprisingly hard. You know that sort of stuff.
I don't like that one.
Yeah, Mum hates that one. Your geography is shocking. I remember we went to India, and I said point to it on a map.
When did we go to India?
We were in Japan. And I said point to India, and you were like, oh, I don't know. And it's really...
But it's somewhere else. We were in Japan. Don't distract me.
All right. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, you're... I gave up geography when I was 14 or something, 13.
So did I.
Did you?
I think you stop in year 9.
But I travel a lot. I've been to seven countries this year. Seven.
Sorry. Don't say, yeah, but I travel a lot, so it's fine that I don't know where I'm going. It's actually worse that you travel a lot and don't know where the hell you are in the world.
I do know where I am when I'm there.
Listen, I wish I could show the people listening
I
at
do.
Home
I swear,
where you put
I look
India
on the
a map.
Map on the plane. When I'm on the plane, I look on
but
a map and I
know
see
where
I'm
is,
going.
Then how are you... Why does that make... This, it's no context. You probably think you're 3 minutes away from the front door if you look at that map, because you've got no idea where it is.
Right. When I went to Barbados, my mum thought Barbados was in Spain. She thought it was a part of Spain. So we are a family that doesn't really do places.
I am going to say this to you.
Mm.
Does the wag of a dog's tail direct where the dog is going to go?
I've no idea. Why?
Does the wake of a ship dictate where that ship is going to go next?
Or where it's been?
What I'm trying to say is, don't blame your family for this. You can absolutely change the course of history if you want to. You could learn your geography. But a dog, it directs itself.
I've just been to Canada. I know where that is. It's in North America. It's next to the United States.
Good. All right, we're learning.
Yeah,
that's good.
Right, okay.
Well, also, can I just say, just to bring it back, that was me there making a greater point about, you know, when people beat themselves up and they go, oh, because I'm like this, that means I'm like this. No. You can write your new script today. Mum used to be terrible at geography, but now she knows where Canada is, so it's fine.
It's a good job we're not in the same room. I would bash you. Listen, so you're not going to, they're not going to let me on the House of Games if you keep saying I'm bad at Kazakhstan. Yeah. So,
that's true.
You know.
Anyway, right. Speaking, we should move on. Because
enjoying that.
That was good fun. But people are probably bored. They've seen the title of this episode and they're going, they haven't talked about LGBTQ plus people at all yet. Not that we know what Richard Osman's sexual orientation is.
Yeah, well, but he has that game. One of the games is where he asks people, would he, if he was in a relationship, prefer this person or this person? And they're quite often trans or genderless or men or women. He doesn't differentiate. He's pan.
Oh, my word. Yep. Richard Osman is pansexual.
And he also likes cats. He loves cats.
Oh, well, that's ruined it.
Well, I don't mean...
That's disgusting.
I don't mean for sexual purposes. I mean...
Why would you immediately follow on from he's pan? You go, yeah, and he loves cats.
He likes to stroke a pussy.
Mum! Oh, God. Okay, Mum, come on now. We need to reel it in. Right. Mm-hmm. Silver Neves. He looks at all sorts of things. He specialises in trauma therapy, sexual compulsivity and LGBTQ plus therapy, all of that, and obviously much more. But today we're going to talk to him about that. So we're joined by him now. Silver, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. For people that don't know Silver, can you give us a little bit more background on yourself?
Yes, I've been working as a psychosexual and relationship therapy for about 10 years. And I specialize in sexual trauma, in compulsive sexual behaviors, and in working with people from the LGBTQ plus communities. And I just love my work. I see individuals and couples, people who have sexual problems, relationship problems, all that stuff. I often find sometimes it's just so strange, you know, when people ask me what I do for a living, sometimes I have to think, do I say therapist or do I say sex therapist? Yeah. What kind of reaction do I want?
It depends sometimes. Sometimes it's quite fun to say sex therapist. It depends on the company and shock people, because sometimes people don't know what to answer. But, you know, it changes you. When you start training or when you do something like this, you get used to talking about things and you don't realise that other people don't. And I went to my book club one day after I'd been a therapist for a while, and I went to my book club and we were talking about an Alan Bennett book, and somebody said, this is a fine book, but he talks so much about masturbation. And I laughed because I thought, oh, they're joking, you know, as if that's not a problem. And they were like, yes, that's really, really terrible. And I was like, oh my God, they're serious.
Yeah. My husband often says, you know, can we get through a dinner party without you mentioning penises and vaginas, please? But that'd be okay. I'm not the one starting the conversation. These people ask.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's, when they find out, they're like, right, well, that's good. I've been waiting to ask a question. Yeah. And, oh God, here we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
The thing we wanted to focus on a bit more today was LGBTQ plus people and the reasons why they might come to sex therapy and relationship therapy and whether they differ at all from heterosexual couples. I imagine in a lot of cases it's all this, it's like a couple is a couple. They might have the same sorts of issues. It might be disagreements or whatever, but are there any big differences you see between LGBTQ plus people that come to therapy as opposed to straight people or heterosexual people?
Yeah, I think there is a big difference. I think that on the surface, you're right that people come from the same reasons, so sexual problems or communication problems, frequent conflict, all of that, and they just want help with that. So on the surface, the problem looks the same. But in the actual relationship, it's quite different because the system is different in some ways. And the big difference is that people in the LGBTQ plus communities, they haven't really had a lot of vision about how to conduct their relationship compared to the image that we have in our society of a heterosexual couple. There is kind of like a guide for a heterosexual couple, what, you know, how it looks like, the rules, if you will. Whereas for LGBTQ people, a lot of the time they feel their relationship to be invalidated because a lot of the society tells them that it's wrong to be in a relationship with someone of the same gender or to be in a relationship with more than one person, or to even have some sexual behaviors that are not the heterosexual ones. And so often they try to follow the heterosexual guide because that's all there is. So they often gay people still think they should be monogamous and sex should be penetrative and all of that stuff, all the heteronormative things. To be fair, a lot of heterosexual couples also struggle with the heteronormative stuff because, you know, the heteronormative guides don't agree with a lot of heterosexual people too.
You know what has occurred to me? There's a bit of a narrative around LGBTQ plus people being better at relationships because they have to think about them more because they don't have a template. So they're always going to be better. They're always going to be better at doing things, and which just creates another set of pressures.
Yes, that's right.
But you read the literature and, oh yeah, there's all this research that says, oh yeah, they're all better.
That's right. And that's just the same thing with vanilla versus kink. There's quite a lot of stories now that vanilla is boring and kink is colourful and it's exciting and you should be kinky. If you're not kinky, you're boring. And, you know, it's not helpful because vanilla is just as exciting and colourful as kink, you know?
Yeah, and one person's vanilla is another person's kink and vice versa.
Right.
But with LGBTQ people, there is the extra thing of what we call minority stress, and that is the kind of ongoing stress of being in a minority, basically. And that stress that is kind of like quite constant. So, yeah, it's bad. It's not safe. And I hear even in the UK sometimes that there are some LGBTQ people that just feel not quite safe in the therapy room with some therapists who don't have the adequate knowledge about LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. And even those therapists are really well-meaning, you know, of course they want to do the best for the clients, but if they don't understand the specificities of what it's like to work with LGBTQ people, they could actually miss them. For example, there's one that's quite a common language that's, oh, I work with a person, you know, I treat everybody the same. It's just the person that counts. And, you know, that's a very, very good sentiment, isn't it? But by looking at everybody the same, that means we also erase the differences. And we need to work with the differences because it is different. They don't live in the same world. You know, LGBTQ people who know that there are 70 countries in the world that don't accept them is not the same person as a heterosexual person that can just book a flight to Dubai without thinking about it, for example. Yeah. And the minority stress is something that heterosexual people don't have to think about. And heterosexual people don't have to think about holding the hand of their partners. It doesn't even register in their mind as something to consider. So there is a lot of differences, and we need to be able to understand those differences to provide a safe space for our clients.
Absolutely. Mm. And that's why, I mean, partly today we wanted to focus on LGBTQ plus people who come to therapy, because like you say, I think some people will see the title and think, well, why is it any different? Why should it be any different? Why would it be different why an LGBTQ plus person would go to therapy as opposed to anyone else? But it's exactly those differences that you realize. And I think, like you say, it's a well-meaning sentiment. It's almost like the All Lives Matter sentiment. It's like, it's a well-meaning idea, but actually that when you look into it any deeper, you realize it is the differences that are important here, and we need to talk about those. That's what we need to work with.
Yeah. So I think that's the difference between heterosexual relationships and LGBTQ relationships, as well as other things that can sometimes inform people's sense of well-being in a relationship. For example, how parents approve or disapprove. You know, and sometimes a relationship in LGBTQ plus relationships can feel really destabilized because the parents of one could just be very disapproving. And then that person has to live in a conflict between not wanting to be rejected by their parents, but at the same time wanting to stay in the relationship. And sometimes it can feel an impossible place to be, to have to split in that way. And those really big emotional turmoil can make relationships very hard to navigate.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. I mean, you just reminded me, I was reading on a forum the other day, someone talking about the fact that they, you know, they identified as a lesbian, and they went to university. They had lots of lesbian relationships. One in particular, they came back from university into their family, who was a big family, very close knit, quite religious as well. They found out about her relationship. They weren't happy at all. She's so tied to this family, and she believes so well in her religion as well, that she knows, in inverted commas, that she shouldn't be a lesbian. And so they've quickly arranged her a marriage, and she's due to get married. And she was asking on this forum, we're due to have sex on our wedding night. how do I prepare? And how, because I'm not excited about it, or I'm not, you know, I don't even know how to have heterosexual sex. Is that a common thing, or is that an extreme case of something like that?
Unfortunately, it's not extreme, and it's happening. It's happening just way too often. And even now in 2022 in the UK, it happens still now. Mm. In fact, I just received a text yesterday from somebody wanting conversion therapy, which is basically the therapy of, you know, right?
Good heavens.
It's happening still now.
So what is conversion therapy?
Conversion therapy is a therapy, which is, you know, therapy, that has the assumption that being heterosexual is the only natural way to be and everything else is a disease. And so if somebody is not heterosexual, the therapy seeks to correct their sexual attraction to become heterosexual, basically. Mm. And what we know now is that it's extremely unethical. It's very, very harmful. But in the UK so far, it is still not banned.
It's not illegal in the UK.
It's not.
No, not yet.
Wow. No. When will that change?
Well, there is at the moment a big movement to make it happen, but I have to say the government is dragging their feet right now. So
really dragging.
Why?
It's really shocking.
And they're dragging their feet. I don't understand it, because I mean, like, gay marriage and stuff is legal in this country. Like, surely we're making steps that way. So unethical.
Yeah. Well, I think the big struggle is that there is a big conflict with religion. And most of the conversion therapy stuff happens within religious settings or with people who are highly religious. And at the moment, some, not everybody, obviously, but some religious people are starting to say, well, if we ban conversion therapy, that means that we become discriminated against. And so there is this big kind of conflict between the discrimination of LGBTQ people and the discrimination of religion, and those two seem to be in fights, really.
Do I want to ask this question? What does conversion therapy look like? Like, what happens in it?
Well, there's loads of different ways to do it. So one of them is, it's less practiced now, but used to be practiced a lot. It was called exorcism.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah.
Jesus.
And that's when they just bring the person that's LGBTQ into a big group of people, usually in a church setting or in a religious place, and they just beat them up sometimes. It can be something like this, or they force them to vomit the demon that makes them gay or whatever. And so it's very, it's actually basically physical abuse and psychological abuse and verbal abuse. It's just terrible. But that's kind of like the extreme. There are some other things where the treatment would be to have a drink that's made up of vinegar and other stuff that would make you want to vomit, and just think when you have that sexual thought, then you drink that drink, then you vomit, and then you associate being sick with the sexual thought. That's called aversion therapy as well.
Yeah, so, they've used electric shocks as well.
Yeah, that as well.
Yeah. Wow.
And that kind of like stress ball with pins inside to hurt your hand when you have sexual thoughts. But now also it's practiced with people who do, on the surface, very good counseling, you know, as in they're very empathic, and they say, I'm here for you, I'm here to explore all of that. But the assumption is your sexual attraction is because of trauma in the past. It's not natural, so we're just gonna heal that trauma and then you're going to become heterosexual again. So that is the more modern version and the harder one to detect, because the abuse is not so overt, but it's a really covert one that does a lot of psychological damage.
Because those therapists were saying, I'm healing their trauma, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm guessing, oh, well, yeah, that just sounds... It sounds...
There's just there's no bit of it. There's no part. No, not even when people say, oh, we're only praying for them. I mean, it's not none of it. It does so much damage. And we're here wiping up the damage all the time. I mean, the number of people I've seen who've been through this, it's ridiculous. In 2022, it's shocking. And every time I see somebody, I just want to cry, even just thinking about it. It's because it's so ludicrous.
Yeah, really. Mm. Yeah.
And so because I obviously saw it on your website, Silver, that this is something that you see a lot. When people come to you, firstly, what sort of damage has been done to them? And then also, how do you go about helping them?
Well, I kind of do mostly trauma therapy, really, because they are traumatized people. So they come with symptoms of post-trauma stress. A lot come with suicidal ideation. Some people even have attempted suicide as well, because they just hate themselves. They hate their sexuality. They feel broken beyond belief because, you know, they think they failed their treatment that they had with conversion therapy, and they're just worthless, basically. So that's really where you start from, and that's a very, very low point. So it's just really a long road of healing the trauma, rebuilding, but also helping them to embrace the sexuality as it is and to start to rebuild from scratch, basically. So the good news is that it's really possible. Once you have a really good therapist that is, LGBTQ friendly, and you can start to provide that safe space, there is a lot of flourishing that can happen. So, there's so much healing that can be done, and that is possible. But for some, it's a very, very long road, because for a lot of people that access conversion therapy now is because they've been told from a very, very young age, sometimes by their own parents, that their sexuality is wrong. So it's an entire lifetime of trauma to try to change.
And it's people that you love and trust, isn't it? That's so awful. That so makes it so much more complicated.
That's right. And often we talk about family of choice compared to family of origin. And unfortunately, there are some people, I mean, there are some parents, I've heard some parents definitely change their mind over time and said, yes, I was homophobic when you were young, but now I've learned since, and now I'm just going to help repair the damage I've done. So, you know, those parents, fantastic, you know, those that can change their mind. But there are some that are really stuck in their beliefs that being LGBTQ is wrong and they shouldn't exist. And so then the big heartbreak for the children of those parents is to move away from them and to give up the hope that they will change and give up the hope that they will love them as they are. And so then they have to find a family of choice. And that is basically, you know, the family that's under the rainbow umbrella, the rainbow flag. And but then there is, you know, when people do find those family of choice, which are basically the friends that they feel really safe with and accepted, people can really thrive.
Yes. There's a bit of a there's still misunderstanding, though, just in general. If you think about terms like internalized homophobia, is used all the time, especially in therapy, and people come to therapy feeling bad about themselves being gay, not necessarily even aware of that. And we kind of label them as having internalized homophobia, when what we should be doing, instead of blaming them for the way they feel because of the way society is treating them, we should be looking at society and the way we all treat one another and saying, hey, you've had a tough time, let's deal with the tough time you've had, not deal with your disordered thinking, which still happens. So even though we're saying, well, we don't sign up to anything to do with conversion therapy, a lot of therapists still buy into blame.
That's right.
And it's not on.
Well, I think that's because psychotherapy is a field where it was just all about the self, isn't it? So, and we've not been so good at looking at the systemic part of it, which is that actually there's nothing wrong with the individual. It's actually the world that is causing the trauma. Yep. And it's an ongoing trauma, because homophobia, biphobia and transphobia is ongoing. So the healing really is kind of like the ongoing maintenance of continuing to heal an ongoing trauma in some ways. And it's so easy for people to say, well, maybe I'm not as good as other people because, oh, look, I hear the Pope that says that, and I hear this person that says that, and and I see on social media somebody being attacked on the bus just for holding the hand of their partner. And all of that are messages that keep saying, well, maybe I'm not safe here, and maybe I need to edit myself and not be myself. And yes, I hope that in the future we're going to understand, we're going to change the term internalized homophobia, and we're going to change it to something else, you know, to more like, you know, if people do have those kind of thoughts, it's just really because they are learned, and because there's not, and because there's not enough other conversations about, looking at how thriving people can be. There is more now, I have to say, and thanks to, you know, platforms like Netflix, for example, or sex education, where there is so much visibility of people of diverse sexual orientations, that can just be, you know, they just have the roles that everybody else have, and they just happen to be LGBTQ, and they just thrive, and they're just, you know, human beings like anybody else.
It's interesting though, that as you said, people your age, for instance, have been through a lot. I mean, we see younger people today who perhaps haven't experienced Section 28 and all the other horrors that there have been really recently. And all that trauma is only just below the, it's still going on, as you say, on the outside, but only just below the surface, and all government sanctioned, all, allowed, all, for the greater good. It's terrifying, really.
Yeah.
And we forget that in most of the world, it is illegal.
Yeah.
You can't.
70 countries have anti-gay laws. So 70 countries where LGBTQ people are not protected, basically.
Mm. Well, does America count as one of those? I'm very interested at the moment reading about this Don't Say Gay bill that's trying to be passed in Florida.
Mm. Yeah. America is considered the liberal country and the LGBTQ safe place. But as you said, I don't think it's quite safe. Yeah. It depends where you go. If you stick to the coast, maybe. New York, California, maybe.
Yeah.
Not sure about the rest.
But Orlando is supposed to be a gay area.
Yeah.
Orlando, Florida, and Miami.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. And yet it's Florida where this is happening. And it's extraordinary.
Terrible. And with this bill, they basically want to make it so that no one in school is allowed to talk about anything gay, lesbian, anything like that.
Yes. Basically another version of Section 28 here in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Do you think that the pendulum is almost swinging back the other way sometimes? Because we were talking earlier about, like, on Netflix and stuff, all these great television shows, and so many times we come on this show and people go, they talk about, when we ask people what their sex education was like, they'll be like, part of my sex education was watching TV and film and just seeing how couples interacted on that and stuff like this. Mm. So having that representation is going to do wonders. And so, like you say, people who are being born now will hopefully feel a lot more comfortable in their own skin when they grow up. So I think that's really good. But then you see things in Florida and you think, well, what's going on? I thought we were progressing. And actually, in some areas, I think we were regressing. And I worry that it's a pendulum swing, where in one way, we've gone really far and we're doing really well, but it only just means it's going to swing twice as hard the other way. Mm. And it's going to be,
Yeah, I don't know either. I think I used to think that we could, as human beings, we could learn and we could evolve and we could just progress in a linear way. But it sounds like, as human beings, if we look at history, we tend to like going around circles.
yeah, sort of like fashion, the same sort of things just crop up again and again and again.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
One thing I was really interested to see as well on your website was that body image issues, particularly among gay men, because obviously body image issues, I think, again, for a lot of people, they just, you read that and you think, well, obviously they're either talking about women who constantly are seeing magazines and Instagram and they're comparing themselves to other women and all that sort of thing, or they think body image issues is for trans people and their own body image issues with themselves and in a body that they don't feel right in, that sort of thing. But it's quite prevalent in the gay community. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. Very, it's very bad, actually. It's really quite similar to women and the and relationship that they have with their body. And again, this is just to do with our society and to do with a systemic kind of standard of beauty. And the gay press is very bad with that, because if you look at the gay press and you look at media for gay men, it's all about bodies that are just perfect and full of muscles and tall and whatever, flawless, basically. So then a lot of people will compare themselves to that standard. And because there aren't hardly any other images of what it could be like for gay people just to be, then it feels like somebody who doesn't fit with that particular strict image, they are just not as good as, not as desirable, and therefore they can feel just a bit bad about themselves or even worthless. And so that is a big issue, and that really drives a lot of eating disorders amongst gay men. Gay men and women have a higher percentage of eating disorders, and that's because of that kind of beauty standard that's put on them. But also with gay men and women, it's ages as well. Like it's a very ageist mentality. And with the gay press, it's the same thing. We prize youth as something that's highly desirable. And as soon as you pass 40, you're basically becoming a zombie and or invisible. And same and same for women. So there is very big pressures with that. And that drives all sorts of different things. And there are some gay men that literally just spend their time at the gym to try to just achieve that standard. And by doing that, they don't pay attention to other areas of their life. And I have so many people in my practice who they just are muscle bound and they've got zero fat in their bodies. And yet they are really lost because they just don't know themselves. They don't know the meaning of life. They don't know what's the point of it all. And they can be extremely depressed or sad or lost really in the world. And the thing is, like, you know, they originally they just go to the gym and all that because they're like, you know, if I do that, if I have that body, then I will get the love, I will be desirable. And then they realize, they do all this work, and then they realize, well, I'm still single and I still don't know how to maintain relationships and I still have sexual problems. So what's going on? And then they hit a wall there and think, okay, so what am I doing now?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And what do you tell them in that situation?
Well, it's just, again, it's kind of like a long, hard road of self-acceptance and to help them love themselves as they are, really, and to make sure that there's more to a human being than just the looks. It's also all the rest, all this other stuff. And often it's, you know, how can you just feel good enough and lovable just by being, you know, not doing, not status, not what you look like, not how much money you earn, not how big your penis is, just be, you know, what is it like to just be? And that it's quite a challenge for a lot of people, because many people have never really thought of that.
There's a great exercise where you write out 100 times, I'm the kind of person who, and it could be absolutely anything, you know, I'm the kind of person who likes sushi, or I'm the kind of person who likes hula hoops, or I'm the kind of person who drives a fast car, or I'm the kind of person who likes penetrative sex, whatever it is, loads, 100 of them. And then you go back and you go, I'm the kind of person who, whatever. And that means. And it's the meaning that's really, really important. And then the third time you go back, I'm the kind of person who, and that means, and so. So then you can double down on being the way you are, or you can think about what sort of change you might want to make. I mean, you know, and quite often that third column is, and I need to accept myself, and I need to accept myself, and I need to accept all the way down. It's a great exercise. Just check in with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful. And also, you know, looking at value, spending some time with the values, because that's so important to people. And often people move away from their own values because they're just caught up with what they think they should do. So with all the shoulds, they move away. And often when you look at people's values, as you were saying, Kate, it just goes back to just a few things, a few essential things. For example, values of connection, or values of being around loved ones, for example. Those are like the meaningful things. And it's not really about working all these hours and being the CEO or something, or earning all that money, or having the perfect body. That is so far down the line of the real meaningful things. When people really start to think about it, they start to reconfigure where the values lie.
Yes, it's so true. And when you, I don't know about you, Silver, but I often say to people, what do you enjoy? And they look, what? what? I mean, and they don't think about what they enjoy. And then most people don't seem to be living the life they want to live. They're living the life they think they ought to live, or they're striving for what they think they ought to have. I mean, sexual frequency is a good example of that, with people coming along for sex therapy saying, right, fix, make us have more sex. And you say, well, do you want to have more sex? Well, no, not really. And but we feel we ought to.
Exactly. And the thing, as you were saying, Kate, that what you enjoy goes to the pleasure conversation, because a lot of people just don't pay attention to the pleasure. Some even feel guilty for being pleasure seeking. And so again, often like with gay men, if they say, oh, well, I have a life or where it's like, you know, the gym and pushing my body, and then it's dry chicken and rice, because that's what they can have.
Lovely.
I think, oh, you know, and where's the pleasure in all of this? And, you know, when you start to talk about the pleasure, then start to realize quite shockingly that their life is actually quite joyless and very few pleasures. And so we're not very good as people in the UK. Anyway, I find in the UK, people don't often tend to embrace their pleasure or to feel or to indulge in pleasure guilt-free.
Yeah, it's definitely not good. And the number of people, if you say to somebody, on a scale of 0 to 10, how much did you enjoy the last time you had sex? So many are under 5. It's often less than 5. And because the point is, get an erection, you get wet or get wet, and orgasm, and get your erection, keep your erection, orgasm. Phew, job done. Did you enjoy it? Not really. It was quite stressful.
Yeah. I was really focused on those 3
job
jobs
done.
The whole time.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it's all about. Mm. And where was the pleasure?
Yeah.
Mm. You're so right.
Absolutely. Well, Silva, we're coming to the end. Thank you so much. A final question, I guess, is if there is anyone listening to this today, and particularly LGBTQ+, and they think, oh yeah, maybe I could do some sex therapy for that. You were talking about, you know, the usefulness of people who sort of know, or they're aware of what's going on. Who should they turn to? Where can they find you and other therapists like you?
I think the website Pink Therapy is a really good place to start, because it's where they have a directory of therapists that are LGBTQ friendly or really well informed. Most of them identify also as LGBTQ, but not all. But that's really the first place. Or you can look for CRSRT, because that's the sex and relationship therapy place. And usually people in CRSRT that are registered with CRSRT know a lot more than about sexuality than the generic therapist. But sometimes it is just really about talking to your therapist about it and asking if they have experience with LGBTQ people. And I said to a lot of my clients who are out there, or potential clients, I said, it's okay to interview your therapist.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And some people have had, as you say, really bad experiences, and they need to interview their therapist, so they need to know what they're going to get. Tell us about your book as well, Silva.
My book is on compulsive sexual behaviours, and it's with Routledge. It came out in May 2021, and it's basically working with compulsive sexual behaviour that is not the sex addiction mindset. So it's a different way of working, because so much of it is about sex addiction, and it's one way, and I'm just proposing a different way.
Yeah, good for you. Brilliant. And we'll link to that.
Well, Silva, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Brilliant.
It was really, really
lovely
great.
To see you.
Really great to connect with you, and keep in touch.
Will do. Absolutely. You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.